Belichick's going to become the oldest coach, supplanting Tom Coughlin, who was 65 when he beat the Patriots in Super Bowl 46. And there it is. The dynasty continues.
It's the footballiest time of the year. With quarterbacks throwing and tailgaters ready for some brats and beer. It's the footballiest time of the year. It's the pigskiniest season.
Oh, hi and hello. I hope all's well. I know all's well wherever you are because it is football season. Welcome to the Dave Damashek Football Program, Studio 66, alive with enthusiasm. I'm the only one in it right now, but I am ready to kick things off. We can't really properly on the DDFP at this point. It's one of our little preseason institutions. I think we're going on year four here, where Will Brinson from CBS Sports, and of course one of the great follows in social media, joins us for our really foolish ranking of the NFC South QBs. We'll kibitz with him about all things. I want to say, first of all, as always, thanks to Zaxby's. Make sure you go over to Zaxby's and get you some of them delicious, famous chicken fingers, wings, and salads. All this jive about who's got the best chicken sandwich. Fah and double fah, I say. Zaxby's is the home for that sort of thing. And I think Will Brinson actually is in a part of these United States where he can track that down. Eddie Spaghetti, you're excited and over the moon.
I am very happy that football is back. We got a little taste with Notre Dame. Soon, Giants going to win week one without Zeke. It's my prediction at the time of this recording. So, yeah, things are looking good.
Yeah, we are on Zeke watch like the rest of football fans across football America are. You know what? Let's say hello to him right now. Let's bring him in. And I do want to, you know what, before we say hello to Will, because he's allowed to push back on all these things very quickly. I think the most important thing in advance of any football season is where you come down on who the six seeds are. Power rankings are great, and mazel tov to Dan Hanzus and his fine work and everybody else doing power rankings. But, of course, this isn't college football. This is pro football, and the only thing that matters come January is how those who gets in and how they're seeded out here. So I'll go over them very quickly for you. I'm not going to give any commentary. Patriots 12-4. They win their division. They're the number one seed. Chargers win the AFC West. They, too, are 12-4. At 10-6, this is it, Eddie Spaghetti, the AFC North. You ready for the big announcement? Here it is. Give me a drum roll.
Wow, this is actually it. Okay.
This is it.
Let me find the drum roll.
Who's going to win the AFC North? Is it Baker? Is it Big Ben? Is it Lamar Jackson? A three-horse race there. All right, you'll put it.
I don't think.
Just make it with your voice. Do it with your voice.
This is like a Gruden knock on.
Here it is. The Pittsburgh Steelers win the division at 10-6. Call me a homer if you want. I don't have faith in that offensive line in Cleveland. I don't have faith that the Ravens, as much as I think that the curveball offense that they're going to throw at the NFL is going to succeed. Mostly, I don't know that they have enough to get past 9-7, and frankly, I don't think the Baltimore Ravens as an organization know that they can do much better under the best of circumstances than 10-6 running this kind of offense. Then I'll go with the Houston Texans also coming in 9-7, 10-6-ish. We'll get into that a little bit. The Chiefs still are going to make the playoffs. Fear not. 11-5, a fine season for them. And then bringing up the rear there, congratulations, Browns fans. You made the playoffs anyway. You get in at 10-6 along with Pittsburgh, but they'll get in via the tiebreakers. Will Pittsburgh to win the AFC North? Sorry, Ravens. Sorry, Bills. Sorry, Jets. I think the Jets have a real shot to sneak in. On the NFC side, your number one seed is the Philadelphia Eagles at 11-5. In the NFC North, I think this is going to surprise some people. I'm going with Aaron Rodgers and company getting it at 11-5 where am I forgetting here? I'm doing these off the top of my head because I'm a pro's pro. The South, I'm going to take the Atlanta Falcons with Matt Ryan. I don't want to tip my hand a little bit too much with before Brinson joins us. And then in the West, I got the San Francisco 49ers winning that division at 10-6. Then your two wild cards, Cowboys, who have a real shot at making a Super Bowl run, I suspect, this year. They get in at 10-6. And your final wild card at 9-7. Get ready here. It's the Chicago Bears. That's right. The Rams and the Seahawks are both missing the postseason. Now it's time. That's a hot take. Now it's time to react. He already has a furrowed brow all the way from North Carolina. You listen to him. You watch him. You do all the rest. He's one of the great follows. If you are a football fan, you want to hear what this guy's talking about at the Pick 6 CBS Sports. Track him down. It's our pal Will Brinson. What's happening, pal?
Thank you. Thank you. Shaq, what's going on, buddy? I like a lot of what you were talking about there. I have to disagree on some stuff.
Sure.
I've got the Minnesota Vikings as the number one seed in the NFC. 13-3.
You know what? This is a practical thing, and I'm not a big fan of in July or June or whenever people start doing this stuff of pulling up the full schedule and putting a W or an L next to every game. Too much, obviously, is likely to go down. And in 2019, I don't know that we've ever had a crazier offseason in the NFL than what we've just gone through here. And it may still be going on. Like we say, we're waiting to hear from Zeke Elliott, but Melvin Gordon could move, and that could wildly swing the way you regard some of these teams out there. But the Vikings, for me, the practical matter is, look at their schedule. Look at the first six games. It's hard to conjure 13-3 when you look at their first month and a half of action there. And I ultimately, here's what I came around on, is it hit me like a ton of bricks. Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers. And I was thinking about the Bears, and I'm one of these skeptics, at least. I think that Matt Nagy and company can bring Mitch Trubisky along sufficiently, and I believe in what he can do. And then I like the pieces defensively, obviously, like the rest of the world there. But Aaron Rodgers is, I think he's probably, I don't know if you've heard, Brinson, some pro athletes like to impose a chip on their shoulder. And I think that if you consider the way Aaron Rodgers' last couple seasons have gone, remember in week one against the same Bears that they're going to be playing on Thursday night, he got hurt, and that's put, and then they had the big heroic second half, but the season was never quite right. McCarthy gets the broom, maybe a season or three too late for some people. But I think he's going to be refreshed, born anew. And another practical measure of these Packers is, I don't get exactly the Mike Daniels departure, but I think this side of Baltimore, perhaps, they have the best secondary going in the NFL. I really like that. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I agree with the construct of the reborn quarterback. We saw it with Big Ben after Bruce Arians, or Todd Haley, who he didn't like, came in. We saw Philip Rivers and Ken Wisenhunt, who, you know, ultimately wasn't very successful, but, you know, getting these quarterbacks out of this sort of, you know, rut, you know, it's like a relationship rut. I mean, you know, just a football version. And you would think that it would work for Aaron Rodgers. I do wonder, though, if he is able to actually operate in this constrictive, you know, very planned out and methodical offense that wants to run the ball, as opposed to just being freewheeling Aaron Rodgers. Like, is he really going to let that go? The guy's shaving, you know, he's got a big mustache going on. He's questioning joint practices. Is it thou doth protest too much? Or is it maybe, I'm a little miffed at how this stuff is going down. This is my team, and I'm going to freewheel if I want to freewheel.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in between, right? He's tenured enough that he's allowed to call some of the shots, and I can't imagine that LaFleur arrived there against his wishes, that Aaron Rodgers had no idea what LaFleur was going to try and establish philosophically. I think he probably has to be okay with that. And like I say, I think the defense is a little bit better. The Mike Daniels thing is very odd, that I still haven't gotten a good explanation for why it went the way it went there. But compared to, and you know, this is in a tight division, tough to call, NFC North, who's the clear-cut best quarterback in contention there? And it's Aaron Rodgers, right? Doesn't that I know it's simplistic thinking, but I think chip on the shoulder year for Aaron Rodgers. I think he's almost slipped a little bit under the radar. It's kind of why I like the Niners a little bit, because it was a couple of years ago, Kyle Shanahan was a genius. Regarded the universe over. Look at what he did with Matt Ryan and with the Falcons and everything else. Kyle Shanahan is going to turn this San Francisco team around. And then Sean McVay kind of rises up, and Shanahan's team built roster building up there in San Francisco. And then Garoppolo gets hurt last year, and everybody was on that bandwagon in 2018 before things kicked off. And as I always say, you have to delay those expectations by 1 year. When everybody is saying, you know, the dark horse is, it's team blank, then you have to wait 1 year before that team actually arrives. And that's why, by the way, I think the Cleveland Browns are a true contender in 2020, not as much 2019, although I suspect they'll have a good year too. But in the same way, Shanahan has slipped under the radar a little bit, and we've kind of moved past him, and he's still in a spot where he can remind everybody of his greatness. I think Aaron Rodgers is about to remind the NFL that you can't leave him out of the conversation of the upper tier, meaning top two or three quarterbacks in the NFL.
How about the Jimmy Garoppolo thing? Not to bounce back to the first part of your tangent here and go off on a different tangent, but it is, Eddie Spaghetti said he allowed like 10 minutes, so we could burn through that.
We can do whatever you want. Yes,
exactly. No, but I think it's interesting how we went from this narrative that Bill Belichick respected Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch so much that the only place he was willing to send the future franchise quarterback that he had in his back pocket, Jimmy G, was to San Francisco. And it is flipped. And I'm guilty of this too, but it's flipped to like, okay, maybe Belichick hosts somebody else. And is Jimmy G good? So to your point, I agree. I think the 49ers are flying under the radar. People don't want to buy the hype. People are starting to question whether or not Jimmy Garoppolo's contract was a problem. And so, yeah, that makes him a true sleeper in a division where, you know, the Seahawks have lost a lot of receivers, lost a lot on defense. The Rams have, you know, offensive line issues, Todd Gurley issues. Yeah, I could see the 49ers rising up, but I'm going to stick with Seattle in that division. I don't like to count out Russell Wilson.
I hear you on that one. And I wonder about, boy, I'm all over the place now. So you said about four things I want to react to. And I feel like the Jimmy G thing. Yes, that's a fair bit of skepticism. But the glass half full version of that is Kyle Shanahan, who has a great track record offensively and what he wants to do and with quarterbacks specifically. And Bill Belichick, the genius of the 21st century, both like Jimmy G. Are they both wrong? Unless there's something nefarious afoot here from Belichick. But I don't buy that, because the whole thing, as far as I understand it, and weigh in here, and I'm excited for football, and I don't want to get into what happens in back offices, at higher levels. But as I understand it, Kraft reacted to what Brady wanted with whatever the spirit of why Tom Brady wanted Jimmy Garoppolo traded. Why? Because I'm going to play till I'm 45 and I like this kid and we share an agent and I think he deserves a break to get a brand new start and be the leading man somewhere else in the NFL. Can you trade him away? Or I don't like this kid looming behind me. He might be more handsome than I am, and I'm getting old, and I don't want the young guy get any too much noise. The David Letterman, I don't want John Stewart following me. I need somebody less talented than me following, because I don't want any pressure of this guy looking better than I do in the same system. By the way, as a side note, if you're a Patriots fan, this is why I keep saying you want – after Tom Brady retires, you want the team to go 7-9 or worse, or it dents the legacy of Tom Brady. If it is, in fact, Belichick's system that's doing it, one, it's unsatisfying for football fans when it's all coach-based. We're getting into a weird place here with coaching, where the coaching is the thing that matters most. If that ends up continues to be true, Sean McVay and Belichick out-coaching more talented teams, people like to get in on that and be pretentious and say, it's, oh yeah, is that fun? Is that what is it? 90s NCAA basketball? Is that what we want? We're hailing Bob Knight versus Coach K versus the talent on the floor. I don't want that. I think that's a bad direction for the NFL. But then I'm a dimwit, so I like simplicity. And I'm from Pittsburgh, and I like 3 yards and a cloud of dust. Anyway. I'm rambling now, but I think that Yeah, I mean, I guess who knows anything about Jimmy G? He didn't. We didn't watch him. It's not like we watched him play for a Power Five conference. It's not like we're informed by any of that. We just buy that. Well, he won a couple games, but the grand total of it is 8 games that we've seen with Jimmy G. So he remains an unknown. However, I think the offensive line is okay. I like the weapons, like the kind of running back, even without McKinnon now. I do still like that Shanahan got his kind of running backs. They have enough at pass catcher, and the defense seems loaded as far as I'm concerned. But Seattle is another player. Tyler Lockett, though, and then who else is catching passes up in Seattle?
Jerron Brown and Will Disley. And somehow some of the Seahawks have worse pass catchers than the 49ers. Like you would definitely rather have George Kittle and Dante Pettis than Tyler Lockett and Will Disley, right?
Yeah, that's the answer. And then address this Rams thing here. Talk about something that I am a skeptic of. And I talked just yesterday to Maurice Jones-Drew one last time. I pressed him on it, a conversation that began in January, maybe even in December 18, is something's wrong with Todd Gurley and you're playing ball with the Rams, Maurice, and you don't want to say it, but you know that there's something going on there with that knee. And he refuses. He as recently as yesterday, Monday of week one, he said, you're crazy. You're wearing a tinfoil hat. Todd Gurley is fine. I said, well, how are the carries going to break out between Gurley and the 2 and 3 at running back? And he said, oh, like 80%. Todd Gurley said they're just going to give him a little bit more of a break than they did last year because he ran out of gas last year.
Why are the only people who continue to insist that Todd Gurley are fine like all collect paychecks from the Rams, whether it's like Sean McVay or Les Snead or Mina Kimes or Maurice Jones-Drew. Like, it's like everybody's afraid of what they might say about Todd Gurley. Like, Todd Gurley is fine. It's like, then why did he sit out the Super Bowl? Why was CJ Anderson in there? Don't tell me CJ Anderson was better. Like, there's some theory out there that Todd Gurley was like, he was freelancing and looking for holes, and CJ Anderson was just running straight forward. No, there's something wrong with his knee. Clearly something wrong with his knee.
Or did you? Yes. But based on that premise that you're laying out that a lot of people have is, so did Sean McVay on the flight home from the Super Bowl say like, Todd, in 2019, you got to get to this style. And they agreed that that's what he would do. And so it's like, see, done, you know, it's over with. We clarified why I was using CJ more than Gurley, and we're ready to roll into 2019 and beyond. Listen, Todd Gurley's a delightful fella. I hope he's well. I love him.
North Carolina native, Shaq. He's from Tarboro, North Carolina, right down the road from me.
When he was in his sophomore year and he was snapping off those 70-yard runs in Georgia, I decreed this is everybody likes to say best running back, best whatever of the generation. I said he will be the best running back of his generation, and you know, I hope it's not over with for him, but I just reading the tea leaves, it didn't look good, and I keep saying it, and I'll say it one last time before we kick it off and we can wash our hands of the last Super Bowl, but Bill Belichick and Brian Flores clearly identified that Sean McVay likes to do everything from under center much more than any other team save the Patriots. Those are the only two teams. I mean, coincidentally, or maybe that's how they got to the Super Bowl with in a world of shotgun. Those are the two teams that love putting the QB under center and running play action. And from the word go in that Super Bowl, they just never were scared of Todd Gurley. They tempted Jared Goff to beat them, and Jared Goff didn't beat them. And by the way, that's another knock on the Rams, a little under the radar. He's set up to succeed. Not necessarily a great number one pass catcher, but, you know, the pass catchers and clever Sean McVay are enough for Jared Goff to be in a good spot. But doesn't he have a lot of pressure? He's playing for that $100 million deal this year. And I think there's some doubt in a world where we now have achieved full QB saturation. All the NFL teams. Andrew
yeah,
Luck threw.
It's amazing.
Andrew Luck kind of mucked it up a little bit, but Jacoby Brissett.
Oh, no. Jacoby Brissett will be great. He will be top 15 quarterback this year.
I see that NC State helmet looming right behind your Shecky award from last year.
The Shecky, yeah.
But okay, Jacoby Brissett is fine, and I think that defense is going to be great.
I think they should go get Melvin Gordon as a side note. I think that's what the Colts should do. Chris Ballard won't, but I think that that would be a cagey move from him to bring in Melvin Gordon. But again, I don't think that I don't think that's ever going to happen. Maybe Bill O'Brien, though. I think that would be a good move.
He's out of picks. He's out of picks. He has no picks left.
He has nothing to give up to get him. All right. Spaghetti, I'm sorry. I'm all over the place. Too much for you?
No, I allotted
the Brinson's hanging with me. He's going all over the joint with me.
Yeah, he's been emailed like 7 different rundowns, and this is our second full attempt at this, so I think he's prepared. And I allotted some time for a tangent, so it's all football.
I don't think it's a tangent. I'm not sticking to any one subject.
That's fine. It's week one. There's a lot going on.
11 seconds per team pretty much is what it feels like we're doing here. So let's talk about those Texans, because it feels to me, Brinson, like Bill O'Brien, I get it. And, as a football fan, primarily before anything else, I can lose focus for half a day on what is Bill O'Brien doing, and he's destroying the long term future of that team and everything else. And then, I didn't decide that I wanted to talk about football for a living so that I could get into high finance. And so if you can let go of that and the implications beyond this season, isn't this a good move? Didn't we just see what happened to Andrew Luck? He got the junk beaten out of him to the point that he said, I just can't do it anymore. And in that same division, there's Deshaun Watson, 2018, got the junk beat out of him again. Wasn't Bill O'Brien on some level compelled in a, I don't know, win now mode, but you're in New Hopkins' prime at this point, and J.J. Watt is at the tail end of his prime. And, on some human level, aren't you doing a disservice to the face of the franchise for all of time by letting his window close without giving him a proper best chance to make a deep playoff run? Not that J.J. Watt is necessarily what Bill O'Brien's thinking about, but you get my point here. I think that they're now better positioned to make a legitimate run in 2019. Agree or no?
Yes, sort of, but no, I don't entirely agree. A couple of thoughts on that. One, J.J. Watt, easily the greatest player in Texans history, right? Mm. I mean, where we are, at least right now in 2019. Two, I think you can at least...
Well, Andre Johnson would be in the conversation, but yes, ultimately it's J.J. Watt. But yes, go ahead. I'm sorry. I just wanted to be a completionist with your hypothetical there, but go ahead.
I agree with you. Andre Johnson would be the primary competition. Here's a couple of problems. One, Deshaun Watson is responsible for a bunch of sacks that he took last year. He holds onto the ball too long. He's a playmaker. I mean, I buy into him. I've always bought into him. I think he has a chance to win them a Super Bowl because he just has that gamer ability. But Bill O'Brien's responsible for some hits he took too. He kept running him in the red zone for whatever reason. He would get inside the five and have Deshaun Watson run. It's like, dude, he just rode down here on a bus. What are you doing? He can't fly. He's so banged up and you're running him in the red zone. It makes no sense. And then the other thing I don't understand is, if you're in win now mode, why are you paying $7 million of Jadeveon Clowney's salary for him to play in Seattle? Why not just be like, listen, Clowney, you can't get a long-term deal anywhere you go. So we will agree not to franchise tag you. You come back here. We'll play. You play for $15 million from us. You max out this year. And I get it. The Laremy Tunsil thing makes sense. You're getting an ascending young player, one of the better young offensive linemen in the league.
Let me interrupt you for a second on that, because sure. I think we have to put a finer point on that, because again, things move pretty fast and you kind of forget who these guys are. And Laremy Tunsil, were it not for wearing that creepy face mask thing with the smoke coming out of it on draft day, was supposed to be the most talented guy in that draft. It wasn't.
He was the number one overall pick, Shaq. He was going to be the number one overall
pick. And Ronnie Stanley, and I know the Ravens are happy with him, but there wasn't a question about Laremy Tunsil being the superior option there. And so now the Texans have a guy who, the way guys' careers go, there's some Andrew Lux and Chris Borland, but if Tunsil wants to, he's got another decade. If the Texans play that better than they've played the Jadeveon Clowney thing, then they have their left tackle. And Matt Money Smith joined us a couple of days ago, and he made a great point that in our world of full QB saturation in the NFL, that it's almost easier to find a good quarterback at this point than that it is a dominant left tackle. And it remains a position of, I don't know if it's essential. I guess it's fair to say essential. Well, for the most part.
There's four pieces, four cornerstones you want when building a franchise. And two football minds who are very different personalities, but both of whom we would agree are smart, Pete Prisco and Daniel Jeremiah. I've seen echo the same sentiment. Pete and Daniel both think alike, but are both completely polar opposites in a hilarious way. You know, Daniel, like a good Christian Southerner. Pete,
he's sweet.
Potentially sweet and sour.
If they ever do a show, that's what we could call it.
That's right. But you know, you got your quarterback, your left tackle, your cornerback, and your pass rusher. And so, yeah, you get two of them there. And then look, yeah, the Texans can win it all this year. I get it, but it's a stars and scrubs roster. And remember when they traded up to get Deshaun Watson a few years ago, which no one doubts, it was a great move. They used an extra first-round pick to pick him up with the Browns. When Watson tore his ACL midway through the season, they finished with four wins. So, like, if Watson and Watt get hurt, it doesn't matter what your offensive line is there, you're going to end up giving away a top 10 pick to the Dolphins in 2020. And so that would be my concern, is you make this big splashy move to win now, and then, you know, you suffer injuries because it happens in football, and all of a sudden you're a 4, 5, 6 win team, and people are wondering whether or not you get fired.
Bottom line it for me, Texans, do you agree they win the South, or are you going with somebody else?
I am going with the Indianapolis Colts.
Ah, you really buy the Jacoby Brissett thing. I do too. And again, one recurring theme here is Eddie Spaghetti can confirm for you on the DDFP is it hit me about 3 months ago. This is all about defense. This is the AFC now. The Chiefs are the anomaly to that. From the Patriots to the Browns, who are at least are going to be good in some aspects defensively. They have some talk about splashy guys. That's what they have on defense, it feels like to me. The Steelers have a good defense. I don't think the Ravens defense is going to fall back as much as some people think. The entire South is loaded defensively, and the Chargers, even without Derwin James, are loaded. And I think that if you buy that idea of, like, you drop somebody into something that's already cooking, if you drop Derwin James into that thing around Thanksgiving, they're going to elevate even further and be dangerous. But I don't see many flaws, although once again, the football gods, I don't know what it is with the Chargers. Why? And even in this decade, when the Capitals and the Cubs and the Cavaliers, everybody's finally getting their break from the sports gods after the boot being on their throat for too long. The Chargers, they're not getting any, no breaks. I don't get what's going on there. But anyway, so I think the Chargers are the best defense there. And now I say I completely jumped away from the Colts. But the Jags, the Titans, I have no feel for the Titans. You're closer to them than we are.
They're bland.
I think that by October that it's going to be sideways, because there will be Tannehill will either actually already be under center, or there will be calls from the stands shouting for it. So I think that I don't love that team, and I still don't love Nick Foles outside of the dark green jersey. I don't buy that he's necessarily the savior anywhere outside of Philadelphia. All right, as we continue to bounce around here, then should we just go to it, Spaghetti? Do you want to just get to it and not run out of time?
It's up to you guys. I mean, you're only 28 minutes in.
We're already at a half an hour.
So. I would have guessed like 7 minutes.
Sheesh. This is what happens to me, Brinson.
No, but you know, Sheck, so like I do my daily Pick Six podcast, as he said promiscuously. But we get all these reviews are like, this guy can't stop going off on tangents. And so I think that you and I combined probably leads to.
Is that bad, though, Brinson?
No, it's great.
Yeah, it makes you have to pay attention. You know what? I will say this, that, like I mentioned already, I'm not a big numbers guy, but the numbers indicate that our show here, our dumb little podcast, has a outsized completion rate. People listen from start to finish, and maybe it's that jagged style. You know, maybe call me like John Coltrane. You know, there's a baseline like, in there somewhere. I'm just seeing how far away I can get from it before I return to it at all times. Right. You see? Okay. Well,
you don't feel like you're like being blitzed with this rundown. You feel like it's a meandering conversation that is about a topic you enjoy and could often potentially spiral off into other things, but in a controlled kind of fashion. That's
well, I will say, if I may self-promote a little bit more than I already am, we now are doing our athletic show too, the Football Fact Check, and that will be, we intentionally did apply some structure to that one where we are going legitimately, because I don't want to do the same show for different audiences or same audience or anything else. So that one will have a different feel to it. It will apply a certain structure, and that's fun and has its virtues too. But yes, we're rambling here. So as we try to cover as many bases as we can here before things kick off there in Chicago, let's get to it. It's our annual attempt to rank the NFC South quarterbacks. And I think we started this because Brinson, Jameis Winston had been drafted, the first overall guy, a number of years ago. And I think one of us spotted that, oh, all of a sudden the NFC South is the home for the best quarterbacks, is the division correct with the most high end quarterbacks. Also, can't have this conversation without once again pointing out that it is the lowest combined total of quarterback jersey numbers since the NFL went to four team divisions. Cam Newton won, Matt Ryan two. Matt Ryan told us at the Super Bowl that the reason he wears number two, big Tim Couch fan growing up. And that's what he, really what he told us.
I did not know that.
How many human beings in the history of human beings have ever adopted a jersey because that was their favorite player growing up, and then you end up being much better than that guy was?
Very few. Very, very
I wonder few. How many guys that actually is true about, you know? Anyway, I wonder, there's got to be somebody somebody else. That's a good point I just stumbled into. But anyway, three Jameis. So now we're up to six. And then Drew Brees wearing that number 9, 15. Try and cobble it together. Don't just apply it from the 2019 starting quarterbacks. Go back through the last 15 years or so. You won't come anywhere close to 15 as your grand total there. I mean, listen, the Philly Rivers exceeds that by two all on his own. All right, let's get to it. The 2019 edition preseason. Every year we rank our quarterbacks 1 through 4. Who come New Year's Eve will we say, I told you so. I told you he was the best quarterback in the division. Point of note, point of record, I've never been right. Every time, whoever I declare, I'm always wrong about. Let's start with you. Who's at number 4, Will Brinson?
Well, I am not buying the Bruce Arians hype, Chef.
Really?
I'm scared of the fact that I'm not buying it, but I'm not buying it. And here's my biggest concern with Jameis Winston and why he's easily my number 4 quarterback in this division is that the quarterbacks that Bruce Arians has had in the past, whether it's Carson Palmer, Andrew Luck, Ben Roethlisberger, even dating back to Peyton Manning, all had one thing in common. They were accurate down the field. And I don't think Jameis Winston is necessarily accurate down the field. Now, he can throw the ball down the field, and he can throw it a long ways. He can throw it really fast and really hard. But those guys could put drops in buckets at 45 yards down the field. And I don't think Jameis is that accurate. And it worries me, too, that offensive line is a problem. Because if you can't protect and you can't throw accurately down the field in a Bruce Arians system, you don't have no risk it, no biscuit. You've got like a bunch of dough on the ground. And that is what I think could end up happening in Tampa Bay.
Boy, what colorful language there from Will Brinson. I like that very much. I hear you. I think Jameis actually does bump up. I say it repeatedly, and I will tell it to you now, Brinson. In a world of alleged QB whisperers, and we are populated in pro football and in college football with guys who are in the right spot for a year or three, and then they are imbued with these powers for the next decade and a half and are employed as offensive coordinators or otherwise for too long, even though the results are in. Oh, yeah, when he doesn't have that high-end talent, he's not as good, as it turns out. Bruce Arians is actually one of those. I mean, too many. I mean, that's a great nuanced point you make, but those are very different kinds of guys, Roethlisberger, Luck, sure, Carson Palmer, and they've all thrived. They've all had some of their best years under Bruce Arians. So why not? And I hear you on the comp with the accuracy of Roethlisberger, one of the great downfield throwers really of all time, or the Super Bowl era. I think that Arians can at least fix that. I think in terms of like football doppelganger, I've always thought Jameis Winston is very Roethlisberger-y. I think
I'll give you that.
They have a lot of the same traits football-wise. And so I do buy it, I guess. It comes down to that. I'm not as skeptical. However, we agree. I just can't see the room. Where am I moving? Who am I moving right. Jameis past? So I have Jameis at number three. I'll take us to number four. At number three, it is. This is one of those taboo subjects. How dare you say something like this out loud?
I think we have the same number three. Then
did you watch the last 2 months of 2018? What Drew Brees is magically refreshed and renewed at whatever age he is? Just because Tom Brady is doing it doesn't mean that every quarterback is going to be able to succeed. Tom Brady is the only guy in the history of people to succeed at this level this late in his life. Drew Brees is smallish, and I mean, I watched it with my two eyes. He just was not throwing the ball well for the last 2 months of the season. How say you, Brinson? So he's my number three.
So, Sheck, let's say hypothetically that there was a group of people that established before the season possible passing yard totals for quarterbacks that you could guess, if you will, whether they will go more or less.
Right? Color me interested.
Right. What would you, if you were in charge, if you're the person in charge of this, what would you set Drew Brees' over under passing yards at, or more or less passing yards at?
I would guess that anybody who would sit around and come up with something like that, I don't even know why you would do that. It just seems like a weird parlor trick to even say, like, oh, let's see if we can guess how many and how close you can get to that number and which side you think it's going to be on. I would say 4,700.
Exactly. And what if I were to tell you that the number that was perhaps released by someone allowing people to guess whether it was more or less was 4,199.
That's just a recipe. I know people like to say, oh, you know, when he has a running game, I do think that that's going to help Aaron Rodgers. I do think that there's some, I think Tom Brady, by the way, Tom Brady's success, he won the Super Bowl. I'm not denigrating him that a guy in his early 40s maybe isn't in his prime anymore. But, you know, that I hate to keep hearkening back to the playoffs of 2018. But if you think that was Tom Brady's victory more than it was Sonny Michel's, then you weren't paying attention. That whole offense was running through Sonny Michel much more than it was Brady. Yes, he made some big-time plays late in the game up in Arrowhead specifically. Obviously, he makes the one throw to Gronkowski in that Super Bowl. But it was all about Sonny Michel. And Belichick, it's not a coincidence that Bill Belichick used a first-round pick. When was the last time he did that? Used a first-round pick and happened to hit it on it with Sonny Michel. That's the reason that the Patriots won the Super Bowl last year.
And then came back and use a third round pick on an SEC running back this year, which tells you that he wants to run the ball even more. My point with Drew Brees, though, is that number is so stunningly low that I think I'm with you. I think that we talk about it's going to be like, oh, it might be Rivers. It might be Ben. Eli's already fallen off the cliff, but it's like, which older quarterback's going to fall off next? Nobody's mentioning it might just be Drew Brees.
You're not allowed because he's perceived to be a nice guy. And,
perceived.
How dare you? Well, no, I'm just throwing it out there. I have a chip on my shoulder, Brinson, and I've worn it all the way since Christmas time. It's getting heavy on me. I've been defending. That's a conversation for another time. You can go back and listen to one of probably 27 DDFPs from the offseason in which I bellyache about the media and the football world's decision to make a martyr of Ben Roethlisberger for the sins of every quarterback, every high-end quarterback. Every knock against Ben Roethlisberger could be issued against every other high-end quarterback in terms of locker room comportment and offering critiques of teammates and not liking a high-end backup and everything else. And Drew Brees isn't immune to that either. I think Tom Brady is the anomaly with that. Or is he? If, in fact, he did have Jimmy G traded away. And the other one's Brett Favre. Outside of that, those kind of QBs, the swaggering leader of men that everyone will follow into the fire and he makes everybody better and all that jive and everybody loves him and everybody wants to just win for that guy exists in Brett Favre and guys in movies. That's just not a true thing. Anyway, Drew Brees is a nice guy. He's a steady hand and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, well, watch him throw the ball.
What if he's old? What if the end of last year is the rest of his career? And this is remember, Peyton Manning, the exact same thing happened. Peyton Manning threw for a pile of yards in 2014. And then at the end of the season, you could see him falling off a cliff. It was very obvious. And then he came back the next year and he didn't have the arm strength. Sometimes it just goes. And Breeze is a guy that we didn't know his career was going to continue.
That's exactly right.
After San Diego. So it shouldn't be surprising if it somehow goes, not because he doesn't take care of his body the way Tom Brady does, just because it's a natural thing to happen. It's the same reason that, you know, I'm in worse shape than I was 10 years ago. And, you know, I hurt more.
You
when
look
I
terrific.
Play tennis.
I just want you to know you look great. But yeah, I hear you completely. And Kamara, the answer to our cynicism is Kamara and Michael Thomas. But, you know, is that really the formula to try? You're not going to bang Kamara week after week. It's not like a good example. I don't know. The Eagles, yeah, I guess, are a good loose example. But he's not – Kamara's not a finish the game and grind out the clock in the fourth quarter guy. So that's not going to be the premise of the Saints. They have a good defense and everything. I think the division happens. Go ahead.
No, Drew Brees had – he didn't even have 4,000 passing yards last year. Like, that is the last time that happened was in, 2005. I mean, it's been 15 years since he was under 4,000 passing yards. That all of these things should be a red flag that even if the Saints want to run the ball more, and that's a good thing, that it part and parcel is because they're worried that Drew Brees might not be able to throw 700 times in a season and be able to make it to the end of the year.
It's a killer. I mean, still, I can go the other way on it and say, you know, but that doesn't require a powerful arm, but those choice routes are just murder when you watch the Saints play. When Kamara comes out of the backfield, I don't know how you stop that, but I guess there's a way to slow it down, and some teams have shown how they like to do it. But yeah, I think Drew Brees happens to be, sadly, and I hope it also isn't true for the Chargers, after all these years of keeping a team afloat and covering up a lot of some ugly rosters there, I wonder if the reason that the team isn't going to achieve as much as people expect them to is the quarterback who's been doing that for so long.
By the way, he's almost certainly going to win MVP this year.
All right, so was that enough doubt about him, Spaghetti? That's a Breeze has to be number one at this point, right?
You guys, the reverse jinx, is that a reverse
yeah
jinx?
Well, it's what happens every year with us actually. Brinson shouldn't put himself side, because he's actually made some good calls on this the last couple of years. I continue to be atrocious at it.
I definitely put Jameis number one at one point in this exercise, which is
I think that's right.
A fireable offense.
I think we both did. Okay. Give it to us. And remember now, if you're the number two quarterback in this division, that means if number one can't go, you then become the number one quarterback. So this is important, who you put in as the runner-up of the best quarterback in the NFC South 2019. Will Brinson says,
I want to put this guy number one, but I just can't do it for health reasons, and it's Cam Newton. I think that Newton, Newton has to be number two. He's coming off shoulder surgery. He is a former MVP. I think that what you see from Cam when he misses time the year before is he comes back pretty healthy the next year and is able to play a full season. And I expect him to be very sharp in this North Turner offense. Curtis Samuel emerges. DJ Moore takes another step. I mean, Moore is sort of being discounted this year, Shaq, but I mean, this is a guy that, you know, 21 years old, put up numbers that are like very few wide receivers have done. Christian McCaffrey is there to ease the load a little bit. Norv did he raised his completion percentage to 67%, which is, I know your colleague Chris Wessling lambasted the discussion, like Norv's offseason trope comment that he's like, I'm going to get Cam above 60%. And I agreed with him. I thought it was insane. And he got him to 67. It's unheard of. A healthy Cam, and we'll get the Panthers to 9 wins. And I think we'll challenge for MVP if he plays well enough. I don't know how much they want to run him, so that may take away from his stats a little bit, but I think Cam is in for a big bounce back year. I think he's my easy pick for comeback player of the year.
I love that. And I also think that you've hit, I mean, Cam Newton, again, that MVP season, by the way, also maybe still the greatest rookie QB season in NFL history. The 15-1 season, reminder, he was throwing the ball to Ted Ginn Jr. and Philly Brown, and he went 15-1. Now the premise is different. He does not need to shoulder the load anymore. He just can't anymore. And wouldn't you know it, fortuitously, Curtis Samuel appears to be, by all accounts of people who are there in camp every day, is finally ready to emerge. And we called that coming out of Ohio State. And it's interesting, between him and Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore, that smallish kind of guy, I feel like these guys are kind of hybrid, that you can move them all over the place. And this will give Cam new life in that offense. I'm with you. I think the Panthers are a team too many people are ignoring. And I wouldn't be surprised. The aforementioned Maurice Jones-Drew, when I told him, I don't know about what's going on with Todd Gurley. I don't think the Rams are even going to make the playoffs this year. He said, you watch. They're going to go down to Carolina this weekend and destroy the Panthers. I think it might be the opposite. I wouldn't be surprised.
I agree.
I think if the Panthers win that one, I think then I'm going to be patting myself on the back already. Like, see, the Rams are not, they're going to be fine. They're not going to, bottom's not going to fall out, but they might not be good. Weigh in on what I've been saying, or you don't know what I've been saying, but what's your opinion on this? Cam Newton does the exact same thing in the exact same window that Andrew Luck does. He announces his retirement during a game, or it comes out, whatever. 2 weeks before the season, a promising year at that for the organization. How does Football America react? The same?
Oh no, Shaq. It is not a, well, this guy's got to do what's best for him and his family, and, you know, proud of him for taking the bull by the horns and really, really owning up for it. This is a big guy. You know, this is doing a lot for mental health in America. That was the reaction to Andrew Luck. People would lose their minds. First of all, there'd be a segment in North Carolina, and I know this because I have family who live here who've said this to me. They'd be like, well, it's about time. Thank God we got rid of Cam. Like, well, it's time to get Will Greer there. This would be awesome. We're going to win some games. It's like, shut up, you crazy rednecks.
But wait a minute. What if one said that he was doing it because, you know, his wife, and, you know, that's it, like, it's a
No. Cam,
I've been through a lot of physical. Do you remember that playoff game when in New Orleans, when I got bonked on the eye and now my shoulder and all the, have you seen some of the licks I've taken? I've really laid it on the line, and I just can't go through the rehab again. Wouldn't that be enough to make all of Football America and all of the usually curmudgeonly media give him a break and say, you know what, Cam's earned the right. He's put his body on the line for this sport. Fans have no business saying boo about this.
No way. Cam danced in the end zone in Tennessee, and like, people wrote letters to the editor, and then he like didn't want to answer press conference questions after getting, you know, humiliated in the Super Bowl. He was blasted for not diving on the football. I mean, Cam is one of the most, for various reasons, one of which is quite obvious, and the other might be because Alabama fans don't like Auburn players. Cam does not get the same treatment as other quarterbacks in the NFL, and I don't think he ever will. He's always been one of the most divisive players, both at the college and pro level. And I fully expect that if he retired from football, that there would be a vastly different reaction. Although I will say, Cam, better career than Andrew Luck. I think
you can all agree on that. Absolutely. Before Andrew Luck said this, it's funny because 2 weeks ago we had that conversation. Cam, in my book, is going to the Hall of Fame if he makes it 2 more years, period. He's going to go to the Hall. People don't like that. Colin Cowherd has played clips of me saying stuff like that and scoffed at it, how ridiculous that is. Why are people so on board for Cam Newton? Andrew Luck was not tracking to the Hall of Fame. I mean, he was borderline based on the resume to that point when he retired. Now he's definitely not going to the Hall of Fame, obviously. And yet I've even heard some people say, you know what, he still should go to the Hall of Fame. This confirmation bias thing that, like, before he ever took a snap in the NFL, that he's the greatest prospect since John Elway, informed the way people reacted to even his bad play. I mean, the fact of the matter is, he threw bad interceptions in bad spots and then played hero and would pull him out of the fire, and he was on a terrible roster. Grigson did him no favors from the start, but nevertheless, the career is the career, and I completely agree with you. 1 over 12, and the reaction would not be the same. And I'm not race baiting, because a lot of people have accused me of that. If Roethlisberger did it, it would be the same thing. And if Aaron Rodgers did it would be the same thing. No one would be like, okay, it's cool, Aaron, you've done enough. You know, you took enough of a beat. People would be like, wait, what? No way, dude. No way. You got to play. This quitter.
Yeah, this quitter is a loser. He just can't. He's scared about never winning another Super Bowl. He can't handle it. Big Ben would be like, oh, like, you got tired. Like, you know, he just made too many teammates mad. He can't even stick around at Pittsburgh anymore, or something of that nature.
It's very strange. I can't exact. Is it that Andrew Luck cuts the figure of a pleasant guy? Is that, I mean, is it that simple? Or is it, like, I mean, I say, the confirmation bias that everybody circled him and said, this is the guy, this is the quarterback of the generation. And he didn't, for whatever reasons, didn't exactly fulfill that. I mean, he never reached a Super Bowl. But yeah,
I think it's because the Colts did him so poorly. Huh. Like, the roster building was so bad. I mean, Cam's had some rough stretches too.
I mentioned the 15-1 team. That offense at least was lousy. Yeah. It was Greg Olsen and Philly Brown. I mean, Greg Olsen was the only high end piece.
I mean, he was throwing to Devin Funchess and Kelvin Benjamin and like in Mike Shula's offense for 7 years and dropping back, holding the ball, having to pat it until those guys like got motored up enough to get down the field and then taking a massive shot as he uncorked the ball deep. I
mean, late career Jericho Cotchery didn't tickle your fancy?
I you know I'm a Jericho Cotchery fan, but no.
I like Jericho, too. Not. Yeah, no, I like him very well, very much, too. All right, so Cam Newton at number two. That means at number one. Number two, Matt Ryan. Talk about him.
Well, I'll tell you the most amazing stat, and I think I've heard it repeated a lot, but maybe it's not out there enough. Do you know what the date of the first Falcons game that is not indoors in 2019 is?
No, but I've been talking to some people who have made some powerful arguments about how certain teams perform on grass versus turf and vice versa. The Patriots do not like being on grass. The Falcons do not like being on grass. Lay it on me.
The first time the Falcons will be outdoors, and we're including Houston with a retractable roof and mm-hmm. Arizona with a retractable roof as well, is November 17th when they play the Panthers in week 11.
Sheesh.
That is insane. And then they close out with, after that game, they have three home games. They're at the 49ers, Jaguars at home, and at the Buccaneers. So they're going to be outdoors three times this year, Shaq. Three times. Matt Ryan's going to put up monster numbers, and I think that will help make him look like the best quarterback in the division, even if the Falcons don't go like 13-3 or anything.
While their schedule, again, I don't try to look into November and December because so much will change between then and now. But look at their first month, their first 6 weeks. It's pretty rugged. So that's the only thing that knocks them down a little bit in my estimation. But how couldn't Matt Ryan succeed? He's already had some high-end years. I think he has a chance to be a borderline MVP given the weapons that he's going to be able to throw the ball around to this year. And I think two, by the way, maybe puts himself pretty much on the cusp of Hall of Fame status with a big year in 2019. It's weird. I have been not the biggest detractor of Matt Ryan, but I've been a doubter along the way. I mean, by the way, if he wins that Super Bowl, they just hang on to 28-3. We regard him completely differently, obviously, but then he did lose that game, and it was on some level his fault, or he definitely deserves some of the criticism for losing that second half lead. But anyway, Matt Ryan has a big year this year. Look at him statistically. Look where he is career-wise. Compare him with other Hall of Fame QBs, and I get the 21st century and exaggerated numbers, but still, Matt Ryan's tracking to the Hall of Fame all of a sudden. I think they win that division. I buy Dan Quinn has come close, at least, to getting the defense he wants. People forget, because it happened so early in the season, that up in Foxborough, Deion Jones and Keanu Neal get hurt. Right out of the gate, and the season's over for them. They're both back. I think things are adding up to, assuming that the rookie tackle works out for them a little bit. I think that this is a team that can challenge the Eagles and the Packers and whoever else you want to throw out there to get to the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, I mean, last year he basically had the same numbers as he did in his MVP season. I mean, they're just not that far off, like 0.5 percentage, percentage points to completion percentage, 20 less passing yards. I mean, his touchdown percentage dropped precipitously, but, he only had three less touchdowns. He just threw the ball a bunch more times. Yards per attempt were down 1.2, but, he's at 8.1 last year. So a very big season. And you're right on the Hall of Fame thing. He's 12th all time in passing yards right now. I mean, I think he will eventually pass Ben, Eli, and Rivers just because of the very nature of where they're set up. You know, he's roughly 10,000 yards behind Ben. I think he'll play two more seasons than Ben does at least, which will lead him to pass him, which means he's all but guaranteed to be top five in passing yards when he retires, barring a major injury or just a complete cliff fall by Matt Ryan, who is, as it currently stands, just turned 34. So I would anticipate he plays for a while. I anticipate he plays very well for a while. And yeah, I think he's a Hall of Famer. The one concern I have with the Falcons is they were injured. Everybody talks about the injuries. They're actually middle of the pack in adjusted games lost last year, according to Football Outsiders. They were like way down at the bottom in defensive games lost, but they were like the healthiest offensive team in football, or one of the healthiest offensive teams in football. So I would worry a little bit about that. Like if Julio gets hurt or Ridley is missing, or what if that offensive line suffers some injuries and they have to depend on those rookies who haven't looked very good, or have been, like Caleb McGarry's already dealing with like a heart condition. Chris Lindstrom, has been okay at guard as he stepped in. I think that would be maybe the one concern I have for the Falcons. Plus, I think, the Saints and the Panthers should both be good. So I don't have them winning the division, but I do have them being a competitive wild card team.
Well, see, it's easy to start talking. If you start touching on every team, you can talk yourself into almost any team being pretty good. That's the thing that we've talked about here on the DDFP all through the offseason here. Last thing then, and so thus ends our annual rankings of the NFC South quarterbacks. And are you taking
it's the same? Well, it's the same, which means we're in deep doo-doo here, because like something is going to happen that's going to make both of us look incredibly stupid.
Probably, yeah, almost certainly. Now, whether or not Zeke is back, Zeke's going to be back, I think, with the Cowboys for week one. I don't know if there's any update since we started flapping our gums here. You know what? I think that defense is really good, and the offensive line everybody's been singing songs about for half a decade now. I like Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup enough, and I think that I think they can absolutely make a playoff run. And I like Dak. The biggest difference is Kellen Moore. I've never understood what Jason Garrett was trying to do in the 21st century. I think Kellen Moore will bring him up to speed in 2019. And I think the offense has a chance to be a revelation, especially if Zeke is in there. And I like the Cowboys a lot, but do you agree that the Eagles are the one to win that division?
We're on the same page. I think the one thing that I'm worried about is Carson Wentz's health, and because Nick Foles ain't walking through that door. I mean, if Carson Wentz gets hurt and cannot play 16 games, then I might lean a little bit towards Dallas. I think the Eagles roster and the job Howie Roseman has done in building out the depth and talent at various positions, this is a team that can be a dominant defense, win with the run game. I think Miles Sanders has a big season, and survive maybe for a couple of weeks if they have to without Wentz. But a long-term injury is going to prevent them from winning the Super Bowl. I do have them winning it over the Cowboys.
Oh, man, I could go on and on. We didn't even touch on Shady McCoy, where Melvin Gordon's going to go. Let's wrap it up here then as we launch a brand-new segment with a guy who likes his food. He lives in a part of the country where they make delicious barbecue. It's time for the Food Block, presented by Bon & Viv Spiked Seltzer. Let's get into it, Brinson. I have been to two Panthers games in my life, and the first time I went there, it was I don't know why I didn't expect it. I think Arrowhead and whatever, but in Texas based places. When I got within a half mile of the stadium, I could smell the smoke. I could smell it. And as I got closer, and the delicious Carolina, I now at this stage in my life, I think I like that vinegar-based kind of sauce, maybe even better than I like the KC barbecue. But anyway, I flipped for it, walking around with the good people of Charlotte and tasting all their meats and such. What's the best barbecue in football America?
Well, I mean, I'm partial to the you got to understand, like, Carolina barbecue is not attempting to take away what Texas barbecue and Kansas City barbecue do, and it's a different fight. Like, those two fight with each other. They're like, oh, look at this giant slab of brisket. Oh, like, we got turkey legs. Take that. Like, listen, we have a very refined set of circumstances we like with our barbecue. It is a whole hog which is then pulled pork, chopped up sometimes, put on a bun, slaw the vinegar, depending on whether you're, you know, you're Eastern or Western in North Carolina. Sometimes the slaw is red, sometimes the slaw is white. I like them both personally, but I'm from the West, so I lean that way. Although I've got a little more Eastern in my white slaw lately. But I think, you know, it's just a different thing. We're not trying to take away what Kansas City and Texas do. So give me Carolina and the pulled pork.
You're trying to add to it. I appreciate you standing up for your region. It's unique
and different.
You know, and the spaghetti, jump in here. You're a barbecue enthusiast. You've sampled them all across these United States. The stereotype of Texas barbecue that they don't know what to do with swine, from my taste buds, is absolutely true.
You didn't have any sausage when you were down when we were.
I mean, the sausages were good.
It was good, yeah.
I mean, but the ribs were. I mean, the
ribs are fine. Where did you get your? You went.
If you got beef ribs, but we're not talking beef. I'm talking about the swine.
No, I think I had pork ribs, and they were pretty good. But I went to a different place than you.
All right, I went to a couple, maybe even a few. When I've been all over the state of Texas and their different football towns, and I'm starting to lean the way of Carolina barbecue. What is, if there was one thing, is it pulled pork then? Because we tried to identify 32 times over what football, if you're going to a tailgate in each of the home stadiums, what the one signature item is. Is it pulled pork then?
Yeah, I think it would be pulled pork. And then it would also be, I think one of the other things too about the side factor matters to me. Like, you know, you're getting collards, you're getting like a macaroni and cheese. I mean, you're getting like a bunch of different higher end sides.
No, that's where you lose me. That's where you lose me. The collard greens are okay. I like, see, what my move is, you got to get it's straightforward. Get some nice French fries with it. If you got good sauce, that's the treat. I know that's not exotic or anything. Mac and cheese. I'm all right with it, you know. I complain. We've done a better job since I called for it when I make my New Year's resolutions for all of society. This one's now like 6 years ago. I announced that we need to do a better job of getting stuffing on every menu in the restaurants. And I don't know if you've noticed we're starting to see more stuffing. If mac and cheese can inhabit most menus in America, why not stuffing? You know, that's my point. I don't mean to, I'm not beating you up too bad, mac and cheese. You can be good. But you ain't better than stuffing. And why do you have to be available on every menu? You know, something to think about.
I don't disagree. I'm a stuffing man. I like we used to go down to, you know, we Thanksgiving in the South, man. You're putting down some hearty casseroles that are mostly filled with some kind of stuffing. Ooh. Oyster stuffing.
Ooh. You know. I like
it. Pork stuffing, whatever kind of stuff.
Will Brinson, you've done it all. You've earned yourself a Bon and Viv. Go get one. Do it in the middle of the day. That's living. And when I was a kid, it was like seeing how late you could stay out. But now I've realized, and I suspect you know this same thing, when you're really living, not just surviving, it's when you're cracking that Bon and Viv midday. That's winning.
But here's the beauty, Sheck. If you get a question from your significant other, like, why is that Bon and Viv cracked? You'd be like, listen, I write about the NFL. I cover the NFL. It's the official spiked seltzer of the NFL. I'm just testing out what they're selling, all right?
I'm a professional. That's why I'm doing it. That's the answer. All right. The great Will Brinson. And I'll tell you, this combined with his appearance midsummer with our mutual pal, Nick Costas, has earned him at least consideration once again for the Shecky Award 2019, our favorite non-football playing guest. Hopefully we'll catch up somewhere over the course of the season. Meantime, good luck to the Wolfpack. Good luck to the many quarterbacks that the Wolfpack has provided to pro football. And then, like I say, we'll look forward to catching up with you sooner rather than later.
Always fun, Sheck. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Thanks, Pally. There he is. Make sure you check him out. Pick Six and otherwise CBS Sports. Wait, you're wrapping me up, Spaghetti? I said no such thing about being ready. All right, we'll wrap it up here.
It's been, you want to do a guess?
No, I don't want, what?
Time guess.
You said we were at 29 minutes, so now we're probably at about 48.
You were at an hour or three.
Yikes. I'll try to do better next time. Thanks, Zaxby's and Bon and Viv. Thin slice of heaven.